8 days into the Senate impeachment trial, you'd be forgiven if you haven't caught every word on the Senate floor. So we're going to take a moment now to hear some of what happened yesterday as the president's defense team made its case. One of the lawyers representing President Trump was Ken Starr, who began by decrying what he called the age of impeachment, despite the fact that it was Starr who led the impeachment efforts against Bill Clinton 22 years ago as a special prosecutor. Starr's main claim is that the House's second article of impeachment against President Trump, obstruction of Congress, has no legal basis. Instead, he argued, executive privilege means the president can ignore subpoenas from Congress without issue.
This court is very familiar with United States versus Nixon. Its unanimity in recognizing the president's profound interest in confidentiality, regardless of the worldview or philosophy of the justice, the justices were unanimous. This isn't just a contrivance. It's built into the very nature of our constitutional order. So let me comment briefly. This constitutionally based recognition of executive privilege and then companion privileges, the deliberative process privilege, the immunity of close presidential advisors from being summoned to testify, these are all firmly established in our law. If there is a dispute between the People's House and the President of the United States over the availability of documents or witnesses, and there is in each and every administration, then go to court. It really is as simple as that. I don't need to belabor the point. But here's the point I would like to emphasize. Frequently, the Justice Department advises the President of the United States that the protection of the presidency calls whatever the president might want to do as a political matter, as an accommodation and a spirit of comity, to protect privileged conversations and communications. I've heard it in my two tours of duty at the Justice Department. Don't release the documents, Mr. President. If you do, you're injuring the presidency.
Meanwhile, Trump lawyer Jane Raskin gave a very literary defense of the president by focusing on his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and claiming that Democrats are using Giuliani as a colorful distraction.
The House managers would have you believe that Mr. Giuliani is at the center of this controversy. They've anointed him the proxy villain of the tale, the leader of a rogue operation. Their presentations were filled with ad hominem attacks and name-calling. Cold-blooded political operative, political bagman. But I suggest to you that he's front and center in their narrative for one reason and one reason alone: to distract from the fact that the evidence does not support their claims. So what's the first tell that Mr. Giuliani's role in this may not be all that it's cracked up to be? They didn't subpoena him to testify. In fact, Mr. Schiff and his committee never even invited him to testify. They took a stab at subpoenaing his documents back in September, and when his lawyer responded with legal defenses to the production, the House walked away. But if Rudy Giuliani is everything they say he is, don't you think they would have subpoenaed and pursued his testimony? Ask yourselves, why didn't they?
The defense returned to that argument many times yesterday, that the House should have opted for a comprehensive trial rather than a swift one. Later in the day, we heard from Trump attorney Pam Bondi, whose history with Trump dates back to when she was the attorney general of Florida and declined to investigate Trump University when it was being accused of fraud. In her remarks, Bondi tried to establish Trump was genuinely worried about corruption at Burisma, the natural gas company where Hunter Biden was employed by the Ukrainian oligarch Mykola Zlochevsky.
George Kent, the very first witness that the Democrats called during their public hearings, testified. Zlochevsky stood out for his self-dealings, even among other oligarchs. House managers didn't tell you that. Ambassador Kurt Volker explained that Burisma had a, quote, very bad reputation as a company for corruption and money laundering, end quote. House managers didn't tell you that. Burisma was so corrupt that George Kent said he intervened to prevent USAID from co-sponsoring an event with Burisma. You know what this event was? It was a child's contest, and the prize was a camera. They were so bad, Burisma, that our country wouldn't even co-sponsor a children's event with Burisma.
Later, we heard from Trump lawyer and former Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, who lectured the Senate on constitutional history. He opened his statements by claiming his own impartiality.
I stand before you today as I stood in 1973 and 1974 for the protection of the constitutional and procedural rights of Richard Nixon, who I personally abhorred, and whose impeachment I personally favored. And as I stood for the rights of Bill Clinton, who I admired, and whose impeachment I strongly opposed. I stand against the application and misapplication of the constitutional criteria in every case and against any president without regard to whether I support his or her parties or policies. I would be making the very same constitutional argument had Hillary Clinton, for whom I voted, been elected and had a Republican House voted to impeach her on these unconstitutional grounds. I am here today because I love my country and our Constitution. Everyone in this room shares that love.
Dershowitz argued that abuse of power and obstruction of Congress are not impeachable offenses because they are too vague, and the framers tried to protect the presidency from vague language, fearing that otherwise Congress could impeach a president over anything.
Some framers, such as Roger Sherman, wanted the president to be removable by the national legislature at its pleasure, much like the British prime minister can be removed by a simple vote of no confidence by Parliament. That view was rejected. Benjamin Franklin opposed decidedly the making of the executive, quote, the mere creature of the legislature. Gouverneur Morris was against the dependence of the executive on the legislature, considering the legislature, you will pardon me quoting this, a great danger to be apprehended. I don't agree with that. James Madison expressed concerns about the president being improperly dependent on the legislature. Others worried about a feeble executive. Hearing these and other arguments against turning the new republic into a parliamentary democracy in which the legislature had the power to remove the president, the framers set out to strike the appropriate balance between the broad concerns that led them to vote for a provision authorizing the impeachment of the president and the need for specific criteria not subject to legislative abuse or overuse. Among the criteria proposed were malpractice, neglect of duty, malconduct, neglect in the execution of office, and this word we'll come back to talk about, maladministration. It was a response to that last term, a term used in Britain as a criteria for impeachment, that Madison responded, so vague a term will be equivalent to a tenure during the pleasure of the Senate. Upon hearing Madison's objections, Colonel Mason withdrew maladministration and substituted other high crimes and misdemeanors. Had a delegate proposed inclusion of abuse of power or obstruction of Congress as enumerated and defined criteria for impeachment, history strongly suggests that Madison would have similarly opposed it and it would have been rejected.
Some of the moments from yesterday's testimony by President Trump's legal team. This is only the third time in history that this country has had a presidential impeachment trial in the Senate, and it is the first time there's been one in an election year, this one taking place with just days to go before the Iowa caucuses.